Today I'll be talking about this 2D n equals 2,2 SUSY sigma model. And this is a good example that I'm going to illustrate the basic idea of a topological twist. In particular, we're describing this AB model. As an example of the topological twist, simplest example. And secondly, we'll be discussing this twisted model in B-wave formalism. And that's the formalism that's been discussed extensively in this workshop. And from this B-wave formalism, you're going to see this topological nature of this theory in a manifest way and simplifies a lot of discussions. Okay, so let me just remind you what's happening. And last time we discussed some very general algebraic facts on supersymmetry. So today we're going to be mainly working on this n equals 2,2 in two dimension. And as I mentioned last time, it has the even part. Now, because 2,2, we have two copies of the irreducible Kayer spinners. So two copies of the left and two copies of the right. That's the superspace. And this part is even, this part is odd. And now it's very convenient to combine these two copies of the real representation terms into a complex representation. So I'm going to write in the following way. S plus, S minus. So these two stuff, complex winner. And also, like the corresponding supercharge, also going to be complexified in the following way. In terms of the notation last time, I look at the following linear combination of these two supercharge to make it into something like complex. That's my convention. Okay, that's a starting point. Now, we're going to write down the corresponding field and corresponding action functional, and then discuss the topological twist for this guy. For the first, we have the SUSY algebra. And in this expression, it's given by this graded commutator of these two operators, given by 2 minus I, d plus minus. And sometimes, like it's useful to write in the following way. I mean, this is represented by the Hamiltonian and the momentum. So x plus minus is the coordinate, like this time plus minus x1. And the d plus minus is the usual formula. OK, that's basically the SUSY algebra. Now, on this space, we have the super coordinate on this n 2,2 superspace. So we have this kind of even coordinate, x0, x1, and odd coordinate. Let's call this one theta plus minus, theta bar plus minus. And Tudor discussed a lot about this fibular structures in one dimension yesterday. Now we have the SUSY operator. Let me just summarize a little bit quickly. We have these SUSY differential operators acting on the superspace. So you have the right invariant vector field generated by this guy. And q plus minus bar equals similar. That's the right invariant part, and the left invariant part given by D. That's the notation last time. And QD is the left and right commutes. Okay, that's the basic structure from last time. Now, we'll be describing the superfield, and also in terms of its component, and this n equal 2.2. And again, it's going to be written down in the following way: x plus minus has many coordinates, and you can expand it. Like the first term is like a scalar, and second term, and so on. And as Tudor mentioned, like we want the whole thing to be like a degree zero bosonic, so it means like this field of fermions, this odd, and this one is boson, for example. And we're gonna just write this function conceptually as a map. Just write in the following way, for convenience, that we're gonna discuss later to glue this kind of thing on the target geometry. So we view this one as a map from this superspace and 2.2. Now, because this guy's degree zero, it's just a map from this one to C. Roughly speaking, that's what's happening. Okay, that's the basic data.
Do you want to change the sign inside the partial plus minus equals minus plus?
Which one?
No, back over here.
This one. This guy? Maybe. You might be right. This one. I think you're probably right. Yeah. Okay. Now, as we mentioned last time, all this kind of superfields form a representation of the Susi algebra, but it's actually a little bit too big. So to get down the degrees of freedom, we can introduce the chiral superfields, and also discussed carefully yesterday in Tudor's talk. So let me just briefly review a superfield. This guy is called chiral. If the following condition is satisfied, like this super anti-chiral derivation applied to this kind of superfield equals zero. So it's a chiral in just super directions. And like Tudor mentioned yesterday, that whenever you have a chiral superfield, you can expand it in terms of like some kind of chiral coordinate. So for example, you observe in this particular example, that you'll observe this kind of coordinate at a chiral coordinate in this sense. Equals zero. This is holomorphic in the fermionic along these odd parameters. This y plus minus equals the x plus minus plus I theta bar plus minus. So you can check this is a kind of chiral coordinate on the superspace. Then this kind of chiral superfield can be expanded in terms of this chiral coordinate. So it only depends on y and theta plus minus. So it's actually a little bit fewer degrees of freedom, and you can expand it in terms of this new coordinate, and that's the convention we're going to use to write down its component fields. And that's the basic structure. So in particular, a chiral superfield here means like it's completely described by this kind of components. So this chiral multiplet. The same thing as these component fields by scalar, two spinner, and this F. Okay, that's the convention we're going to use. Now, once you have this, this condition, it's a very natural condition, you observe like this Q, so Suzuki charge, commutes with this D. So this condition is preserved under this like Suzuki action. So particularly we know like this Q action applied to chiral scene, preserve the chiral superfield.
So,
which psi? Yes, actually you can further expand this guy in terms of like the full components, like theta plus minus. So particularly this term, leading term.
That's a function of y.
Yeah. So it's a function of y. So you can further expand it into x, so you get the full expansion. But it's very convenient to and also for many calculations. So this particular, this chiral superfield forms a representation of the Suzuki algebra. And then we're gonna write this guy is chiral. This chiral superfield are gonna write in the following way. We think about this one as a map, a function from this kind of n 2, 2 chiral space to C. And I won't describe this one carefully, but you can sort of imagine like what this one is. Look at the corresponding coordinate and so on, but one way to write it. Okay, so there's some very basic constructions you can do on this particular superspace. Now we're going to describe geometry to write down action functionals and so on. So, Suzuki action. So first, let's consider like a couple of chiral superfields. Let's consider n chiral superfield. And we think about this as a map in the following way, phi from this chiral superspace to like Cn. I mean, you can think about this one as a local piece of the target. And then we try to glue later. Now, there are basically two types of main types of Suzuki invariant action you can construct in the following way. The first one is called a D term. So the idea is like you pick up kind of like any kind of smooth functional target, and you can write down a kind of action functional in the following way. So let K Zi, Zi bar be a smooth function on Cn. And basically this plays a role of like a Kähler potential. When we later discussed is gluing for example, on a Kähler manifold. Then you can write down the following action functional and by doing like superspace integration as follows. So you basically pull back this function by this map and integrate over this superspace. That's the kind of action function you can write it down. And this one actually is very easy to see. This one is actually is Suzuki invariant by construction. For example, let me just give you like one quick calculation, and all the other stuff works in a very similar way. So, for example, let's look at this kind of Suzuki transformation Q plus minus. It's like D theta plus minus minus I theta bar plus minus. And we apply this transformation to this particular action functional, for example, become some kind of integrals. So for example, this is like derivation, so you apply something inside, what you find is like this differential operator. Apply to this k. And now you observe like this first one kills some of the theta, and now you need a full theta to integrate on the superspace. So the first term goes away. The second term is like a total derivative along x direction. So this guy also goes away, and this one is zero by construction. You can check the other terms work in a very similar way. So in particular, this action functional is supersymmetric invariant. I did it on the exercise, I mean, so I hope everybody did the exercise. Okay.
The 5 R's are anti-Pythagorean.
Which one?
The 5 R's.
Oh, yes. The bar is actually, it's actually compress conjugate, and this one, is, yeah. Good point. Let me just put here. Your bar is somehow anti-chiral. So, there is somehow annihilated by this operator. We take a bar in a very natural construction. Yeah, thank you.
You speak high, so does it still have a real, like, are its even coordinates still a real submanifold, or is it like?
It has a real structure, yeah, it is. It's a little bit subtle when you talk about this signature, like Lorentzian or this Euclidean, it's different a little bit, but let's not worry too much about it so far. Okay, that's the supersymmetric action functional. Now the second type, like this F term. And suppose you have like holomorphic function on the target. Then you can construct the following action functional. And you set the theta bar equals to zero. And if you care about this reality, you can add into this kind of a complex conjugate if you like. And again, it's a good exercise. I mean, similar to this calculation, a little bit more tricky, but this is a similar. You just figure out that for a chiral superfield, this term basically pick up the top component. That's what I call the F component for this particular chiral superfield. And if you compute this supersymmetric transformation carefully, you're going to observe that the F term of this chiral superfield always like transform like a total derivative under this Susi transformation. So that's one way to see this. But probably it's a good exercise for you to check. So these are basically two terms. And these two terms behave very differently, I mean, if at the quantum level. I mean, in particular, if you try to do like this kind of renormalization process as like Phil and Kevin were discussing, you'll observe like only this term will be renormalized. I mean, if a counter term is special for this kind of a D term, and this guy is protected. I mean, under this renormalization. Okay, that's the thing. But now this is only one piece. We wanna do geometry, so we're gonna try to glue this data to get together, both from the source and from the target. So let me talk about this gluing. I mentioned that this plays a role of like Taylor potential, so let's make this one precise of what this means and how to use this fact to glue. So observe that take any kind of a holomorph function. Let's say H of Z. and consider the transformation of the killer potential, that's the kind of thing, I mean, the kind of ambiguity you're going to find in figuring out the meaning of killer potential. So hz plus h bar z. And then you observe that if you under this scalar transformation, this guy actually, this action functional, is actually invariant. So this D term K equals the same expression. K plus holomorphic plus anti-holomorphic. Sorry, this should be the, let me write it this way. This is a superfield plus holomorphic, so it's chiral, plus it's anti-chiral. And this is just because this is a chiral superfield, so it basically has only half of the degrees of freedom in the odd parameter. Now you want to do full integration on the full, like a superspace, and you don't have enough room, so this integration is zero. So these two steps are the same. So this means that this kind of expression only depends on the Caleb metric, Jij bar. Di dj bar. So this means that you can glue this guy to as a map from this n equals 2,2 chiral superfield to a symplectic manifold, a Caleb manifold, say. And then the way you write down action functional, just locally pick up a Caleb potential, write it down like that, and expand it, and you can write down formulas. That's the first thing you do. Now, secondly, I mean, you can glue on the worksheet, on the source. So now, first one, second one, glue on the worksheet. And basically, we have this, let's write this chiral superfield in component. So basically, I mean, this is a local description, but when you write down things on the manifold, like we know all of these are representations of the corresponding spin group. So basically, you work with like associated vector bundle starting from a frame bundle, you look at the associated vector bundle, this become sections of the vector bundle and so on. And all these kind of symmetries, like under Pongrad symmetry, tells you like this is going to be glued on the manifold. And eventually, for example, you find the following data. This guy describe leading part, this horizontal part, describe like just a map from the Riemann surface to a target. Then this kind of fermions, I mean, psi, intrinsically describe the corresponding associated vector bundle, I mean the spin bundle, basically, on the Riemann surface. And you can read off from the representation. It's like S plus minus two spinners. And this coordinate just tell you like what's the corresponding like thing on the target is given by pullback of the tangent bundle, 1,0. And similarly, it's complex conjugate, works in a very similar way. pullback after zero one tangent bounded, so on. And that's the intrinsic way of describing this component. It's not hard to imagine like this is like a, because this is like an expanded first order expansion of the kind of field. So this looks like a also expanded around some constant map. So that's why it lives in some kind of bundles that are constructed from the pullback of something on the target. That's a very natural construction. Then after you do this, eventually, whatever you find is something like think about this this model as a map from n equals 2 comma 2. Chiral on the Riemann surface. I didn't mention what this one precisely is, but if you want, you can on to a target Taylor. And also you can write down action functionals. Probably, I don't know, this is not probably it's not that intuitive, but roughly speaking, it looks like I'm gonna write it down once in this talk. And if you, I mean, in the exercise today, you will learn, roughly speaking, like how this kind of calculation is done. Let me just give you some terms. Involves the metric, Gij bar. And that's the usual, like, norm of the d phi, and then you have terms like fermions, j bar, yeah, later I will explain how to get this action functional from a much simpler way if you work with BV, but let me first write down the full action functional that you usually see in the literature. And some curvature term. Plus the last term that it actually is like it can integrate out, but let me just put it here. Gamma ITK. Probably just product FJ minus gamma I bar, J bar, K bar, L bar. Okay, that's what this action function looks like. If you haven't seen this before, it looks very complicated, but if you sit down and try to compute, you can observe like a fun feeling about all these terms. And so this term, like this covariant derivative by pull back the bundle, you induce a connection on this bundle, that's the covariant derivative. But let me, for completeness, let me just put down the formula here. Yes. So it's better just put it here. So I won't write down anything like that later, I mean, for this expression. So I just put it, write it once. Just get a basic idea about what it looked like. okay. Okay, that's what it looks like. So later, I mentioned like later, I will explain to you another way to describe this in terms of BV formalism. But that's the thing. Like it sort of sees that it's kind of thing, it's globally defined. And as it's constructed from the local dispersion I mentioned. But now the question is like, well, do we still have supersymmetry? Do we have a global supersymmetry for this action functional? Well, actually, if you do like this, I mean, the answer actually is no. So let me try to explain. And this motivates the topological twist. Something gets lost along the way. So let me explain a little bit about the general idea of topological twist. So I will write down the general procedure, but in this example, the problem is the following. Like, in this case, for this map, there is some topological obstruction for checking this supersymmetry. Just because, for example, under this like a Susi transformation, let's write this Susi transformation by delta. And we have four supercharge, so let's parameterize this transformation by epsilon plus minus, and so on. That's the general Susi transformation can do. But now you observe, like, once you glue on the worksheet, this kind of thing is a local expression. So this parameter epsilon actually is sections of a stream bundle. And this means something interesting. Like, suppose you start with something that you already know is supersymmetric on the flat case. Then you do this variation to check, for example, the Susi transformation. And you know it's going to be as the following structure. I mean, once you do the calculation locally, but.
Can you just say out loud what kind of object that phi chiral sigma is?
Which?
The domain of phi.
Yeah. Well, this E. This here, domain here?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't say this, but locally, I mean, like, you can just think about this one as, if you like coordinate, that's what it looks like, but you can say locally, we have a like superfield, that's a function ring for this local piece, and this can be glued on a Riemann surface. Yeah, that's actually given by functions on the spinner, for example, and so on.
Yeah,
I mean,
how did you know that?
Well, I mean, that's the way you get this one is the following. Like, you know, this guy, I mean, locally, it started by ramifications of the like SON or spin group. So the way you glue is that you look at the frame bundle, you look at the associated vector bundle, and all these guys will, like, will become sections of that particular vector bundle. So it comes from representation of the spin.
Psi I was a section of the spin bundle.
Yes.
So it's still a section.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's how it works. So this basically we require like locally require like Poincaré symmetry, all this kind of symmetry guarantees that this kind of thing can be glued. So that's one thing to one way to write say this, but.
And can you just remind us also why epsilon should be sections of the spin bundle?
Yeah, because this guy now is like it's a spinner, so if you think about this one like locally, I mean something like on the representation. So now you want to work on like associated vector bundle. So this one must be a section of the associated vector bundle, the coefficient, at some point. So yeah, you can if you like, you can make everything precise if you work with like a principal bundles and for the Susi and so on. But yeah, probably that's a good exercise to check as well. Yeah, so I just mean that everything now, this kind of Susi charge and so on, I mean, become local. I mean, it's like it's an element of the representation. And then when you glue things on the manifold, you have to take sections of the particular associated vector bundle. And that's where it lies in. And you can view this one as like coordinate, but this coordinate look like it's really not a scalar, but the section of the vector bundle. yeah, this all depends on how you look at the representation. So if this guy like is scalar under the spin representation, so this is like a trivial vector bundle, and you can write it down very easily. But in general, like this is not trivial vector bundle spinners. So, but the general structure is like, once you get something like that, you do variation of your action functional, you always look like this. That's a very general.
So delta isn't a section of the spin bundle.
Delta is intrinsic.
So maybe, I don't know if that's the confusion. So the Q's were sections of the spin bundle would be given, so the absolute
is dual. Dual, yes. This is scalar. Probably that's the way. Yeah. This guy is intrinsic, so it lies on the dual vector bundles. It's like you have a vector space, you choose a basis, you choose coordinate, the coordinate is the section of the dual bundle, something like that. And the general structure is like, when you do variation, you always find something like this guy, and this is like Noether method, I mean. And roughly speaking, this is a general structure. Actually, that's somehow that it can compute it locally by tracking this supersymmetric invariant. And locally, you know, like this one, it can be chosen to be constant. So this is zero. The action functional is supersymmetric invariant. It's kind of integration by part works. But globally, I mean, this guy may not be zero. You want this one to be zero. Basically, you want something like that to be zero. So global supersymmetry requires a covariant constant spinner, for example. And that's a very general situation that whenever we discuss supersymmetry on particular topology, this kind of thing always happens. But now, like this one is a highly non-trivial condition. I mean, if your topology is non-trivial, I mean, in this case, Riemann surface, this is not, spin bundle is non-trivial, then you cannot find such a covariant constant spinner. So in particular, this global supersymmetry is lost when you glue things on the geometry. But there's a way out. That's the idea of topological twist. But what is something? Some expressions. But this actually, it's a charge for the SUSY, but in terms of Noether theorem. But in general, locally, the invariant means like generally, it has the following form. Now, here's the idea about topological twist. Now, the issue here is like, once we know this particular representation of the spin group, and then the glue on the manifold, you find particular vector bundles, and they are non-trivial. But actually, you can use the symmetry of the SUSY algebra somehow to twist your representation a little bit, such that you glue on the manifold, you get something a little bit different. So let me try to explain this idea. So there are two basic couple of steps. First one, consider a theory. With the following symmetry. So for example, this is like a spin group that's always required, and that's the thing with glue. And again, there's another thing, it's called R-symmetry. We mentioned last time, but we never discussed it. So this time, let's try to be more specific. It's additional order automorphism of the SUSY algebra. We'll look at it later, for this n equals 2, 2. But assume such a situation, so it acts on the theory. Now you choose, basically, again, the spinners, I mean, for the representation tells you like the in particular spin bundle on the target, but this way the twist is the following. They choose a homomorphism. Let's call this one rho spin mapped to this R symmetry group. you know this one is a symmetry, I mean, acts on all the representations that appeared in the construction. Then, and now you consider step two is to consider somehow the twisted or new Poincaré symmetry, the new spin representation of Poincaré symmetry. By, for example, you look at, you know, it's a representation of this particular spin group, but now you can map this guy to the group, the product, the spin with the R symmetry group, by identity product with the row, it's the one you choose. And this guy acts on the spin representation, or whatever that you build up, I mean, you build for this associative representation. And you declare this is a new Poincaré symmetry. Now, then find, so, once you do this twist, you know this now. This guy as a spin representation, it's going to be different a little bit by this twisting, and if you're lucky, it's possible to find actually now a scalar, a trivial representation inside this guy. So find Q such that Q lies in a component of a trivial representation, rep of trivial representation of this spin group inside S, and I also require like Q square equals 0. And this is possible just because when you do the twisting, you change the representation. That's very likely to be the case. And once you know this, this one lies in a trivial representation, and then we work with like a frame bundle, look at the social vector bundle. This guy become a trivial bundle on the manifold. So in particular, you can choose a global section, and this one will generate a global supersymmetry. So such a problem can be solved. And that's a very general procedure for doing the twist. And in particular, like in the topological case, in topological twist, like you can find further operators I mentioned last time, whose commutator of this Q generates the translations, then this translation operator is going to be homotopy trivial. But it might also generate like part of the translations, probably you get some kind of holomorphic twist and all things like that. But that's something you can try. So let's work it out in this two-dimensional and n equals 2, 2 case and see what kind of representation we can twist. So that's the basic idea. So let's do rather explicitly for our example. And actually, it turns out to be very convenient to work with like Euclidean case. So I didn't mention this one, but now let's suddenly work with Euclidean. This sounds a little bit easier, but let's assume everything works nicely. And the spin 1-1 become like SO 1-1 become SO 2. That's the group. And now on the manifold, when you change to Euclidean signature, these two spinners just become, for example, like a root of the canonical line bundle on a Riemann surface. So this one is this particular line bundle, square root of a canonical line bundle. And this guy is this complex conjugate. So locally, it behaves like a DZ square root. That's why you're like, that's for spin representations, that's why you have a half. And the Susi operator, I mean the Susi algebra look like This guy, we just wrote it in the very beginning of this talk. Now that's the main object. Now let's try to observe that what kind of symmetries this algebra has. Now you observe that you can have like left and right U1 symmetry, rotating like plus and plus bar or minus and minus bar. Actually, you have this kind of SO2 cross left U1 symmetry cross right U1 symmetry. Let me try to explain. So this part is our asymmetry. You have two copies of SO1. So for example, how the axon this representation. So the left one, it only acts on S minus and S minus bar. So you send a vector here to E to the, I use this convention. And S minus bar goes to E to the I alpha over 2. S minus bar. U1R. So this U1 only acts on this particular like a left mode, like S minus and S minus bar. The other one acts on the right mode, S plus. And you see from this algebra that if you rotate, I mean, either like left or right, rotate by the face, they can cancel out and preserve this algebraic structure. So these two U1 cross U1 is the R symmetry of this Lucy algebra. Now let's perform this kind of topological twist, this idea. We're going to find, basically, this now is our Poincaré group. I mean, this is like a SON group. We're going to find something like, try to find the homomorphism from this one to the product, to do the twisting. Now, there are main two examples. Like first one is called A twist, A model. So you choose the following representation. Before I describe this one, I want to put a table that is convenient to read what's happening. I just put it here. I hope people can see this. This is the group SO2 cross U1 left cross U1 right. Then I need a little bit more space. So let's look at the four representation, S plus, S minus, S plus bar, S minus bar. And look at what kind of representation they lie in under this group. So I indexed by the weight of the U1 action. So this one is a positive spinner, so it's like a 1/2 for the first weight. Now the left, you see this is only S on the minus part, so it's 0. And on the plus, on the right U1 action is minus 1/2. So that's the weight. Is it visible from up here? Okay. And similarly, this one is like minus 1/2, minus 1/2, 0. This one is like 1/2, 0, 1/2. This one is like 1 minus 1/2, 1/2, and 0. That's the weight under the particular U1 action, the spinner, and so on. Just a way to remember the corresponding representation. Now let's do the twist. The first one is A twist. A twist, we choose the following representation. Let's call this variable A from SO2, which is also U1, to the R symmetric group, U1 left cross U1 right. By this diagonal action, E I alpha goes to E I alpha cross E I alpha. It's diagonal action. And under this this twisting, now the SO2 under this combination acts on your spinner in a little bit different way. So basically, you look at the weight. So you take a sum of the original weight on a spinner, and with the weight on the left and the weight on the right, take the sum. That's the corresponding representation. So let's make a table here to see what's happening. Okay. Again, let's put SO2 cross U1 left cross U1 right. Now this is the A twist. Now under this new representation, what it look like? It's very simple. You don't do anything for the R symmetry charge, but you just add them up, like for the spin and the left and right. So what you find, you add them up, it's like the first one becomes zero. You find like 0, 0, minus 1/2. The second one, you add them up, it's like minus 1. And minus 1/2 and 0. The third one, if you add them up, it's like a 1, 0, 1/2, that's the weight. The last one is like a 0, 1/2, and 0. That's the A twist. And now you observe that these two guys, this one and this one, they are now spinner under this spin representation, a scalar. So it really glues to a trivial representation that I can use to write down Susi charge. So more precisely, now the Susi charge, the following two stuff, Q plus and Q minus bar, survive globally. That's roughly speaking what's happening. And again, you use this one to write down the Susi symmetric transformation for this particular direction. So the corresponding A twisted Susi operator is the sum of these two. So in particular, like operators, local operators, and so on in the states, and in this twisted theory will be represented by this QA cohomology. And also after the twist, originally the sections, I mean, the for example, the fermions become sections of different bundle. For example, let's say psi I plus. Now, plus means like lysing the spin bound of S plus. And S plus now is a scalar, so actually, this one now lies in a section of the following guy, I mean, which is much simpler. So it's a trivial representation, no spinner anymore. I mean, this is like a scalar. And for example, this one, I bar, is this one. So it's like a weight one, it's like lies in a canonical line bundle. K tensor the pullback of this particular bundle. And similarly, I mean, you can write it down very carefully. Psi minus I, now it's a section of, you just read off where's S minus look like. Now it's minus one means like in the complex conjugate, complex conjugate of the spin of the canonical line bundle. So what you find is like K bar tensor with this particular section. And similarly, like this guy, now it's an element of this bundle. And again, try to write down action functionals in terms of this particular field. I mean, this is now have a different geometric meaning, but same action functional. But you sort of see like this term and this guy. Somehow they are scalar from the version point of view. Then you apply this Susi transformation, Q plus and Q minus bar. It somehow it change like the scalar phi I to this one, and the phi I bar to this guy, which behave like, if you think about this one, looking like a one form on a target. And if you try to express this Susi transformation in terms of the fields, and then you observe that this one behave like a Durham differential on a target. And in the exercise, it will show like exactly that that's what's happening, that if you compute the local observables on the worksheet, it's represented by Durham complex on a target. That's the A twist. There's one thing I want to mention, which is going to play an important role in this B-wave formalism. So just roughly and briefly, it's the following stuff. So I want to keep this guy. So if you try to write down the action functional, like change everything under this meaning, and you're going to observe the following expression, this new action functional can be written down as like QA exact terms plus the volume of the Riemann surface under the target scalar form. It's topological. And this guy behave like this term will be crucial later. We'll discuss B-wave formalism. And that's the gauge fixing condition in the B-wave formalism. But let me just write it down, give you a rough sense. And in particular, you can see that this action functional is Q closed. I mean, if you applied it, and you sort of capture the topological data, like the volume plus something that it can tune. And all the metric dependence of the theory, for example, a QA exact. So the theory is topological. That's one thing. Now I want to discuss the topological B model. The U1 is the same like that, so let me just put two here and look at topological B model. And B model actually is very similar, but it choose a different representation. So you choose this one, so like a map to opted one minus IF. Choose this particular representation. Then you look at how the corresponding representation look like, I mean, under this twisting. So it means like the original weight add up this left minus right. So we can try to compute. Now this one, add this one minus one, this is a one. So this is look like this guy. It's now spin charge one under the new SO2. And minus this one plus this one minus one is minus one. So it's the same. And this two, I mean, you see like it's going to be zero. And it's a B twist. Let's see. Okay. And then it's very similar. You see, like, the corresponding I should keep this one, but okay. So you see, like the corresponding scalar, I mean, the global supersymmetry is given by these two stuff. And the QB is the sum of these two, which can generate all the translations on the worksheet. That's what's happening. And you can also write down the action functional and so on, but let me just try not to do this one. That's the basic idea about the A-B twist. And you sort of observe that after you do this twisting, I mean, the theory becomes topological and has a global supersymmetry. Okay, that's a rough idea about the twisting, the simplest example in two dimensions. The next topic I want to explain is about the fact that this topological model can be formulated like nicely in terms of BB formalism. So there you're going to see this topological nature in a manifest way. So now let me discuss a little bit about this BB formalism of this AB twist. It turns out that the BB construction of this topological AB model use the essential construction of AKSZ. Actually, Dylan discussed this AKSZ construction yesterday, so let me just remind you quickly about what this one is. And all these AB models are particular versions of the AKSZ in some sense, and I try to explain. So the AKSZ construction says the following, like if you try to suppose you have the following situation. I'm not going to erase this part. Now suppose we have the following geometric situation. Suppose let x dx, y dy. I probably use different notation as what Dylan said yesterday, but essentially the same. So we have two DG space. You can think about this one as some kind of locally ring space with a structure shift like a DG algebra. So this one, the structure shift of x and y are all like DGAs. Now assume we have the following situation. Suppose we have an integration map on x. Integration. It's an integration for like functions on x to a number, say, n of degree minus k. And suppose y is equipped with a symplectic form of degree k minus 1. You sum them up, you find that the appropriate notion of this mapping space from x to y, now it's minus 1 shifted symplectic. And you have seen many examples yesterday in Dylan's talk. And also, the original DG structure, dx, dy, this kind of thing, induce a derivation on the mapping space, which can be translated to a Hamiltonian function. That's the solution of the classical mass equation. Then these two operations, like the commutes and d squared equals zero, means like this action functional solve the classical mass equation. that has been discussed a lot in this workshop. Now, let me explain to you like how this AB model sits into this situation. And it turns out that if you work with the BB formalism, this action functional is extremely simple. This topological nature somehow is also separated from the way you construct the theory. So, by the way, in the original AKSA paper, like the main examples that it is described for this construction is precisely the AB twisted sigma model. So that's the example I want to explain. So the main thing that in this application is the Poisson sigma model. So didn't discuss this one yesterday, so let me just mention a little bit, because that is the one which leads to AB model. And roughly speaking, the source space is given by, like in the literature it's sometimes written down in this way, and it's given by this some kind of Riemann surface. The structure shift is given by the Durham complex. And Dylan wrote yesterday about in the following way, like the Durham in Dylan's talk. So that's the functional ring from the source. So in particular, if you look at the functions on the space, it's the Raman complex on the Riemann surface, and you can integrate. But I didn't say this is a surface. Two-dimensional. If you integrate, you get a number, that's the degree minus 2, because it's like a two-dimensional. Secondly, now you look at a target, you look at a shifted cotangent bundle. Roughly speaking, it's given by x, the structure shift is given by the polyvector field on x. So this one is like sections of this guy, exterior product of the tangent bundle. And this one has a natural symplectic structure of degree 1. I can sort of see from the construction, I mean, the fiber is dual to the base coordinate, but after shift. So if you choose local coordinate, it's going to be very convenient to write in this way. So theta plus I, xi, theta I. And then this symplectic form look like dxi, watch d theta I. Although one of them is even, the other one is odd. Okay, now, great. Then suppose you have a Poisson tensor. So a Poisson tensor. And we can write it in a way that using this Fermilic variable, theta I, theta j. And the Poisson tensor just means like the bracket of P with itself is zero in this one-shifted sympathetic structure. And in particular, this guy generates a differential. It's acts on functions on this guy. That's the DG structure for the target. We're going to be many use. Then apply this AKSA construction. You look at the mapping space. Now consider the mapping space. From this one to the target, like cotangent bundle, shift by 1. And you can write down action functionals. So this one has like a I think I won't need this anymore, so probably just erase it. And then you can write down the following, like, say, locally, if you write down fields. So let's write in terms of this coordinate, so you know, like, the way you describe a map like this is by specifying a target coordinate and put back become something on the source. But something on the source is a differential form. So locally, it's represented by something like that. It's like a phi I and eta I. They're all like forms on the surface. That's how you represent a map with the minus one symplectic structure. By exactly this integral of this two. And the corresponding action function will look like two terms. The first term represents the Durham differential on sigma. The second term represents the Poisson structure on a target. And this one satisfies the classical mass equation, as expected. Okay, that's a BV construction, I mean, for this Poisson symbol. Now let me describe the A model and B model. So there's one issue like I want to mention before we proceed to discuss the construction of the AB twisted thick model in this process. So in the BV formalism, and suppose you have a field like E, like minus one symplectic, and suppose you try to find some action functional satisfying, like, for example, solving quantum mass equation, like delta QME, as discussed in the field sense talk. Then what's happening is that if you choose a super Lagrangian subspace, some manifold, let's say in this way, super, in some super sense. Then you look at this integration. This one is gonna be independent. That's the basic fundamental theorem in this BV formalism of continuous deformation. Of this L. So L plays a role of like a gauge fixing condition in practice. And this guy just represents the fact that it's it constructs something which is quantum gauge invariant.
Can you say that explicitly? Like if I pick my sort of gauge fixing way,
So probably let me explain to you the example that we failed to discuss, like a Saint-Simon series, for example. They have differential forms. Then you have the like a differential, like a Durham differential. Then you pick a D star, this is a gauge fixing operator, and the Lagrangian is given by the image of D star. That's one example. So if you compute things using this Lagrangian, then you get the propagator essential as Wilson described. Something similar. Yeah. That's a good thing. Like first one, you obtain something like at the quantum level, quantum gauge invariance, I mean, a very like intrinsic way. The other guy is about the choice of this Lagrangian. So we'll see what's happening for the AB twisted model. It's about, like, actually, the action function turns out to be very simple. The issue is about the choice of Lagrangian, which requires a choice of either like complex structure or symplectic structure. So let me try to explain. So let me start with the A model. in the original AKSC construction. Now, so this guy is Kähler. In particular, this one is a natural symplectic form. Now let's look at the following mapping space in this AKSZ construction. That's exactly this the same mapping space in this Poisson cycle model. Now, I want to show you first of all, omega give rise to a Poisson tensor. Like say omega ij, something like that. This is in real coordinate. Then you can write down the action functional. Let's say call this one A model by, I can use the same notation like phi's. So it's a metric, it's a symplectic form. It's omega ij phi eta I eta j. Without the first term, just only look at the second term. It's throw away the first term. And if you look, you use the complex coordinate, it can be written down like omega ij bar using this scalar stuff, eta I, eta j bar. That's actually functional. Which again, like satisfies classical mass equation for sure. Like it's like just tell you like this one is this is symplectic form. Now you need to find a Lagrangian to do the gauge fixing. It turns out like now you're going to use a complex structure. To get a Lagrangian sum manifold. I'll try to explain how this one works. Then you see like once you do this gauge fixing, I mean it's automatically that the theory is somehow is independent of the deformation of the complex structure. That's what the nature of the A model. It comes from this choice of the Lagrangian. So how this works? It works very nicely in the following way. At least you like the action functional, right? This is very simple. I mean, at least I prefer this one to the original complicated expression. But now. First, let's write down the fields. Now, our fields like let's say I call phi of phi. Forget. I mean, we have this kind of field phi I locally. This parameter. Well, now I have I bar since I and plus complex conjugate. That's my local coordinate. And actually, there's a forms on the Riemann surface. Now let's try to figure out a polarization in the following way. So under this particular minus one symplectic structure, let's write down, let's decompose this one in the following way. So let's write this field to be like, so it's a differential form on sigma. I want to specify which component. So it can be zero form, one form, two form, etc. So we're going to write in the following way. I z bar. So it represents four components of the field. And similarly for eta. Now, they look at the following data. So now look at all the fields. Phi zero I. Let me lay down all the fields here. You will see what's happening. The bar I, now you have the eta field. Let's call this for eta I, the bar. I write it in a different order. I try to explain the bar I naught. So this is the four components of the eta field, again. And I write it in a way that actually these two stuff are conjugate variables, I mean, under this symplectic pairing. So these two stuff. I don't need this one anyway. So this guy, this two stuff anti-field and this one essential. So the symplectic pairing is non-trivial between this guy, so on. No, also there's another copy, like complex conjugate part, and let me not write it down. Now let's specify a polarization by circle this one, this one, this one, and this one. And so let's call this M, this M, the manifold, we parameterized this circle coordinate, circle fields. So because these two stuff are conjugate, I mean, these two, the itself is Lagrangian. I mean, you see, like, it shows a polarization in the following way. So this means that your mapping space can be viewed as the shifted cotangent bundle minus one shifted cotangent bundle on this M. That's the way to write down the corresponding the write down the symplectic pairing minus one symplectic pairing. Now, then I'm gonna write down a Lagrangian some manifold. This is the one appeared as a generating function. I mean, in the construction of a two-sigma model, it's given by consider psi this particular guy. Let me write it down. That, actually, this one appeared before, so let me just write it again. It's phi. Let me call this one phi j bar zero form. Do I have a z form as well? I think I have a z form somewhere. Complex conjugate. So it's a bar, it's complex conjugate. And there also complex conjugate, I didn't say, but complex conjugate. Then you have this z bar form, dz bar, phi z, zero form I plus phi I z. Let me check. I z bar, so it should be j bar z, sorry. And this field appeared, so on. I j bar, g I j bar. It's viewed as a function on the base manifold. It only depends on the base manifold. It built up from this particular like circle fields. Then you look at Lagrangian, consider, let's call this one A model Lagrangian. It's the graph of this guy inside the shifted cotangent bundle. It look like, I mean, it's complicated, but but you know, this is the same thing as the mapping space. And you find a Lagrangian, then check. It's a good exercise, check. That this particular simple action functional restrict to this LA, it's a model action. And this is the AKSC construction. I guess I start a little bit late, so can I have five more minutes to explain the B model? That's what's happening for the A model. The B model, actually, you're gonna use the full Poisson sigma model. Let me probably just quickly write it, I mean. Although, by the way, this is, you see, like, the way you choose this Lagrangian, I mean, needs a choice of complex structure on a target. But, you know, whenever you do computations in the BB formalism, doesn't depend. That's the topological nature of this A twist. Now we're going to do the B model. And B model, I mean, in the original AKNZ paper, he was they're using this kind of a real tangent bundle of X. That's the mapping, that's the model. But it turns out to be more convenient to identify the real vector bundle with the complexified 0-1 bundle. So populous, let me write it this way. As a real, a smooth vector bundle, they're the same. So, but let me write it this way. It's like a 0-1 bundle on X because it's complex. And then look at the cotangent bundle of that one. That's the, again, similar to the Poisson sigma model. Now, again, you have this kind of you have a D here, DG. And on the other, on this side, you have an additional DG structure given by the double operator, the double R, acting on here. It's going to generate action functional. So locally, local coordinate, locally. So if you look at the expression here, you have the following fields. So you have like a phi I, that's the base coordinate. And phi I bar is complex conjugate. And there's a fiber coordinate from this, this also one shifted, sorry. It's a Feynmanic. And let's call this one eta bar A bar. That's all the fields you're gonna see from this component. And let's take a cotangent, it's a conjugate. You have a conjugate variable, anti-fields. U bar, A bar. These two are conjugate anti-fields. Now, and now you write down the BV action as B. It's just the usual one, like Durham represented Durham. Let me just collect it, this information. Which eta I bar plus dui, which eta I. And that's the Durham part, that is the first term you see. It's just explaining components. The other one is a very simple one that generates the D-bar operator. That's the you can easily to see that if you take a bracket of this one, take for example just the phi bar, eta I phi bar to eta bar, and that's the D-bar operator. And that's it. I mean, so this is a D-bar operator. And now the issue here is like write down the corresponding Lagrangian. Then you can sort of imagine that the choice of Lagrangian depends on the simplicity structure. So it will tell you the topological nature of the B model that it doesn't depend on the simplicity structure. So here's the choice. So probably, let me tell you the answer. So you have the following field. For I, let me write in the following way. Phi 2 and phi bar 0, phi bar 1, phi bar. I bar 2, eta bar, I bar 0, eta bar, I bar 1, eta bar, I bar 2. So I'm going to write in a way that this 0, 1, 2 means like a 0 form, 1 form, 2 form component of the field. This one, because it's a function on the source, that's represented by a differential form. It's conjugate variable, it's like eta I 2, the conjugate, eta I 1, and eta I 0, and eta bar I bar 2, eta bar I bar 1, eta bar I bar 0, and U bar I bar 2, U bar I bar 1, and U bar I bar 0. That's all the fields. And You can figure out polarization. Where's the chalk? Ah, gosh. Okay. You can figure out this fields. This guy, this guy, this one, this one, this one, this one, this one, this one, and this one. So you each pair choose one of them. That's the polarization. And again, like you choose M to be, this is kind of parameterized by the circle field. It's a Lagrangian submanifold here, and this mapping space can be written down. This mapping space here can be written down as a shifted cotangent bundle of M. Then you choose the following action functional, this is the gauge fixing condition, like a G, IJ bar, phi 1 I, watch star, D, phi bar, J bar not minus 1 half gamma IJK, phi 1 J, phi 1 K, Z I 0. This is a function on the base manifold. And then you choose your Lagrangian LB to be the graph. Of this guy. Let's call this one B gauge fixing. And you check that a simple SB here restricted to LB is the B molar action that you're going to discover from the twist of the supersymmetric gauge theory. Okay, I think I will stop here. Thank you. Somehow it sort of this choice comes from the way, in Witten's paper, you find the action function to look like a, it can be written down to like a Q exact, things like that. That term always played the role of a gauge fixing condition. You can check, but again, it's like you have to compute. It's a priori. If I tell you the answer, it's very simple. But if you don't know the answer first, you try to figure it out. It's much more complicated.
So you're looking for something that looks kind of like a yeah. Exact.
Yeah, I got a little bit confused when I was trying to prepare this talk that it took me some time to precisely tell you what's the correct field. But if you do the calc, I don't have a priori first order principle to tell you the answer. So.
My other question is, in mirror symmetry or whatever, we realize that even though the topologically twisted theory, and therefore its category of boundary conditions or whatever, only depends on
Yes.
Choosing a complex structure can choose a stability condition on that kind.
Yes.
Is that part of the story that you can see why the choice of Lagrangian did tell you something about stability?
Yeah. I didn't discuss the boundary condition here. Like you can sort of see the boundary condition if you have worked with like a case with Riemann surface boundary and try to see how supersymmetry is preserved. And David, I guess you will talk about a little bit about this, right? Or I guess, so probably can just
ask,
yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.